Wives and Daughters by Elizabeth Gaskell, dramatized in 9 episodes by Barry Campbell, with Kathleen Hellbutt, Angela Pleasance, Tom Wilkinson, Robert Lang, Anne Louise Lambert, and Thelma Whiteley. Part 4, Mr. Osborne Hamley's Secret.
It was at Squire Hamley's request that Molly Gibson once more went to stay at Hamley Hall in order to comfort the ailing Mrs. Hamley. And truth to tell, Molly was not sorry to leave home, which had become somewhat abhorrent to her by virtue of the numerous innovations introduced by her new mamma. But if Molly thought that peace dwelt perpetually at Hamley Hall, she was sorely mistaken. Something was out of tune in the whole establishment.
Here's Molly. Come at last.
My dear.
She is not so well this morning.
Oh.
Here's the doctor's daughter. Nearly as good as the doctor himself. I'll leave her in charge for a little while.
Come and sit by me, Molly. There's a good girl.
How are you feeling today, Mrs. Hamley?
My dear, it's you who must tell me all. It's no breach of confidence, for I shan't mention it again, and I shan't be here long. How does it all go on? The new mother, the good resolutions...
The wedding went off splendidly. It was such a fine day, and Lord Cumnor was very kind. I had the most beautiful dress to wear, and my new mamma seemed very happy.
But you do not speak of your own feelings. Tell me, do you and Mrs. Gibson get on happily together?
Not always. You know we didn't know much of each other before we were put to live together.
I didn't like what the squire told me last night. He was very angry. Ah, I see, Molly. You won't tell me your sorrows. And yet, perhaps I could have done you some good.
I think perhaps Papa wouldn't like it. Oh, and besides, you've helped me so much, you and Mr. Roger. I often think of the things he said. They come in so usefully and are such strength to me.
Ah, Roger. Yes, he is to be trusted. But, oh, my dear, Osborne has so disappointed us. And the squire is terribly angry. I can't think how all the money was spent.
Money?
Advances through moneylenders, besides bills. And now the squire says he must mortgage some of the land, and you can't think how it cuts him to the heart. He sold a great deal of timber to send the two boys to college. Osborne. Oh, what a dear, innocent boy he was. And so clever. Everyone said he was sure of a fellowship, and then... all went wrong. I don't know how. The squire has told him not to show his face at home till he's paid off the debts he has incurred out of his allowance. Out of £250 a year to pay off more than £900 and not to come home till then. The squire has given orders that the men are to be turned off the draining works. And I lie awake thinking of their poor families this wintry weather. What shall we do? Oh, Molly. Osborne was such a sweet baby. Such a loving boy.
Don't you know at all how the money has gone?
No. Not at all. That's the sting. There are tailor's bills and bills for wine and pictures. Those come to £500. With the money for which he will give no account, of which we only heard through the squire's London agents, who found out that certain disreputable attorneys were making inquiries as to the entail of the estate. Oh, Molly, worse than all, I don't know how to bring myself to tell you. Inquiries as to the age and health of the squire, his dear father, who had loved him so dearly and made so much of him, I have sometimes thought that we've almost done Roger an injustice.
Oh, I'm sure you've not. Oh, dear, dear Mrs. Hamley. Don't you think that it would be better not to misjudge Mr. Osborne? We don't know what he has done with the money. He is so good that he may have wanted it to relieve some poor person, some tradesman, for instance, pressed by creditors. Or He may have been imposed upon by people.
Oh, please, go on. It does me good to hear the hopeful side taken. Squire has been so hurt. Strange-looking man coming into the neighborhood, questioning the tenants and grumbling about the last fall of timber as if they were calculating the squire's death.
Then doesn't it show that they are bad men? And would bad men scruple to impose upon him and to ruin him?
Don't you see? You only make him out weak instead of wicked.
Yes, perhaps I do. But I don't think he was weak. You know yourself how very clever he really is. Besides, I would rather he was weak than wicked.
I think I've been very weak, Molly. I've made such an idol of my beautiful Osborne. And he turns out to have feet of clay, not strong enough to stand firm on the ground. And that's the best view of his conduct, too.
What with his anger against his son, his anxiety about his wife, and the difficulty of raising the money immediately required, the poor squire was in a sad state. He was angry and impatient with everyone who came near him, and once he was even on the point of dismissing Mr. Gibson because he insisted on a consultation with Dr. Nichols, the great physician of the county. Mr. Gibson went away, heavy at heart from the thought of Mrs. Hamley's approaching death, but thinking little enough of the squire's angry words. He had almost forgotten them, in fact, when about 9 o'clock that evening a groom rode in from Hamley Hall with a note from the squire.
Dear Gibson, for God's sake forgive me if I was rude today. She is much worse. Come and spend the night here. I put myself in your hands. Sometimes I think it is the turning point, and she'll rally after this bout. I trust all to you. Yours ever, R. Hamley. P.S. Molly is a treasure. God help me.
Oh, how is she now, Papa?
Molly, I've written to Osborne and Roger. Oh. Do you know Osborne's address?
No, Papa. He's in disgrace. I don't know if the squire knows it, and she's been too ill to write.
Oh, never mind. I'll enclose it to Roger. He'll know where Osborne is. And they're sure to come home as soon as they hear my report of their mother's state. Molly, I wish you'd tell the squire what I've done. It's not a pleasant piece of work.
Squire Hamley, when Papa was here today, he bade me tell you that he had written to Mr. Roger Hamley to say that he thought he'd better come home. And he enclosed a letter to Mr. Osborne Hamley to say the same thing.
So, your father sent for Osborne and Roger?
Yes.
Roger would have been down from Cambridge on the 18th. And he sent for Osborne, too. Did you know? It's right. Quite right. I understand. It has come at length. Come. Come. Osborne has brought it on, though. She might have... I can't forgive him. I cannot.
Squire Hamley.
Go to her, my dear. I cannot. Not just yet. I will soon. You're a good girl. God bless you.
It is not to be supposed that Molly had remained all this time at the Hall without interruption. Once or twice her father had brought her a summons home. Molly thought she could perceive that he brought it unwillingly. In fact, it was Mrs. Gibson that had sent for her, almost as it were to preserve a right of way through her actions.
You shall come back tomorrow, or the next day. Mama seems to think people will put a bad construction on your being away so much from home so soon after our marriage.
Oh, Papa, I'm afraid Mrs. Hamley will miss me.
I don't think it likely she'll miss you as much as she would have done a month ago. She sleeps so much now that she's scarcely conscious of the lapse of time. I'll see that you come back here in a day or two.
What a time she lingers. Your papa never expected she would last half so long after the last attack. It must be very wearing work to them all. I declare, you look quite another creature since you were there. One can only wish it meant last for their sake.
You don't know how the squire values every minute, Mama.
I know it by my dear Kirkpatrick. There really were days when I thought it would never end. But we won't talk any more of such dismal things. You've had quite enough of them, I'm sure, and it always makes me melancholy to hear of illness and death. And yet your dear papa seems sometimes as if he could talk of nothing else. I'm going to take you out tonight, though, and that will give you something of a change. There's some talk of dancing. It's at Mrs. Edwards.
Oh, Mama, I cannot go. I've been so much with her, and she may be suffering so, or even dying. And I to be dancing.
Nonsense. You're no relation, so you need not feel it so much. Why, we might sit twirling our thumbs and repeating hymns all our lives if we were to do nothing else when people are dying.
I cannot go.
Why, what's this now, Molly?
This stupid child simply will not listen to reason.
I cannot. Not while Mrs. Hammond.
I say she will go out tonight.
I suppose I can have some lunch. I went away at 6 this morning and there's nothing in the dining room. I have to go off again directly.
Where are you going, Molly?
Only to see about Papa's lunch.
There are servants to do it. I don't like your going into the kitchen.
Come, Molly. Sit down and be quiet. One comes home wanting peace and quietness. And food, too. So, if I'm to be appealed to, which I beg I may not be another time, I settle that Molly stops at home this evening. I shall come back late and tired. I see that I have something ready to eat, Goosey.
Yes, Papa.
And then I'll dress myself up in my best and go and fetch you home, my dear. I wish all these wedding festivities were well over. And now I'll go into the dining room and gorge myself.
Molly found Roger established at the hall when she returned after her absence at home. She gathered that Osborne was coming, but very little was said about him in any way. The squire scarcely left his wife's room. He sat by her, watching her, and now and then moaning to himself. Mrs. Hamley was now so much under the influence of opiates that she did not often rouse up, but when she did, she almost invariably asked for Molly.
Mr. Roger.
Oh.
I have been wanting to see you alone.
Oh, I'm sorry, you startled me. Have you come from my mother's room?
Yes, and your mother does so want some news of your brother.
Well, she hardly ever names him to me.
If you don't mind, I should like to be able to tell her something if she asks me again.
What does she want to know? Does she know that Osborne is coming soon, any day?
Well, yes, but she wants to know where he is.
I can't tell you. I believe he's abroad, but I'm not sure.
But you sent Papa's letter to him.
I've sent it to a friend of his, who will know better than I do where he's to be found. You must know that he isn't free from creditors, Molly. For that and for other reasons, I don't exactly know where he is.
I will tell her so. You are sure he will come?
Quite sure. But, Molly, I think my mother may live some time yet, don't you? You're not afraid of any change in her condition that makes you so anxious for Osborne's coming?
Oh, no. It's only for her that I asked. She did seem so to crave for news of him.
I don't know what we should any of us have done without you. You've been like a daughter to my mother.
I do so love her.
Yes, I see. Have you ever noticed the way she sometimes calls you Fanny? It was the name of a little sister of ours who died. I think she often takes you for her.
Yes. But will you not tell me something more of your brother? She really hungers for news of him.
She better ask me herself. Yet, no, I'm so involved by promises of secrecy that I couldn't satisfy if she once began to question me. I believe he's in Belgium, and that he went there partly to avoid his creditors. You know my father has refused to pay his debts.
Yes. I think what vexes your father a good deal is some mystery as to how some of the money was spent.
If my mother ever says anything about that part of the affair, assure her from me that there is nothing of vice or wrongdoing about it. I can't say more.
Do you think your father will be very angry with him?
I don't know. My mother's illness may alter him, but he didn't easily forgive us formerly. My father is a man of few affections, but what he has are very strong. He feels anything that touches him on those points deeply and permanently. That unlucky valuing of the property has given my father the idea of post-obits.
What are they?
Raising money to be paid on my father's death, which, of course, involves calculations as to the duration of his life.
How shocking!
No, I am sure, as I am of my own life, that Osborne never did anything of the kind. My father expressed his suspicions in a language that irritated Osborne. And it doesn't speak out and won't justify himself, even as much as he might. Well, we must leave it to time. My mother would have brought us all right if she had been what she once was.
Roger turned away, leaving Molly very sad. She knew that every member of the family she cared for so much was in trouble, out of which she saw no exit. and her small power of helping them was diminishing day by day as Mrs. Hamley sank more and more under the influence of opiates and stupefying illness. That evening, Osborne Hamley arrived. He came straight into the drawing-room where Molly sat, reading by firelight.
How is she? You will tell me. You must know the truth. I've travelled day and night since I got your father's letter.
She's very ill, that you know, but I don't think she suffers much pain, and she has wanted you sadly.
My father forbade me to come.
I know. Your brother has been away too. I think no one knew how ill she was. She's been an invalid for so long.
You know. Yes. She told you a great deal. If I had not been forbidden to come home, I should have told her all. Does my father know of my coming?
Yes, I told him Papa had sent for you.
Oh, Molly, my dear, I wondered if you would be so kind. You here, sir?
Father, it must be...
You can speak later, Molly.
Oh, I wish Roger would come. He seems to be the only one to give me a welcome.
Mr. Osborne.
You heard all the words my father said to me. They were not much of a welcome, were they? And my dear mother, who always... Whether I was to blame or not... I suppose Roger is sure to come home tonight.
Oh, quite sure.
You're staying here, are you not? Do you often see my mother?
Well, I used... But Mrs. Hamley hasn't asked for me for 3 days now, and I don't go into her room unless she asks. I'm leaving on Friday, I believe.
My mother is very fond of you, I know. I suppose you don't know whether she is quite conscious, quite herself.
Not always conscious. She has to take so many opiates. But she never wanders, only forgets and sleeps.
Oh, Mother... Mother!
The last afternoon of Molly's stay at the Hall came. Roger had gone out on the squire's business. Molly went into the library. She had had leave given to choose out any book she wished to read and to take them home with her. She mounted on the ladder to get to a particularly high shelf up in a dark corner of the room, and finding there some volume that looked interesting, she sat down on the step to read part of it.
A swallow lays from 4 to 6 white eggs, dotted with red specks, and brings out her first brood about the last week of June, or the first week in June. Oh, am I in your way?
Oh, how you startled me!
I only came here for a minute to look for some books.
It is I who am disturbing you. I must write a letter for the post, and then I shall be gone. Oh. Is not this open door too cold for you?
Oh, no, it is so fresh and pleasant. Please write your letter or you will miss the post. I shall sit here and read quietly, if I may.
Oh, but of course. Here's a letter from your wife, Osborne. I went past the post.
Roger! What have you done? Don't you see her? Oh.
I am so sorry. I didn't wish to hear it, but I couldn't help it. Oh, you will trust me, won't you? Please, you know I shall not tell.
We can't help it. Only Roger, who knew of what importance it was, ought to have looked around him before speaking.
I am going away. Perhaps I ought not to have been here, and I'm very sorry, very. But I'll try and forget what I've heard.
Miss Gibson, you can't do that. But will you promise me never to speak of it to anyone, not even to me or to Roger? Will you try to act and speak as if you had never heard it? I'm sure from what Roger has told me about you, that if you give me this promise, I may rely upon it.
Oh, yes, I will promise. I think I should have done so even without a promise, but it is perhaps better to bind oneself. I will go away now. I wish I had never come into this room.
Molly's father was not at home when she returned. she found the house in a great state of upheaval, owing to the arrival of the news that Cynthia Kirkpatrick, the stepsister whom she had never met, was due to come home the following day.
Mama, Mary tells me that Cynthia is coming home. Is it not rather earlier than expected?
Oh, Molly, you're home at last. Yes, Cynthia is coming home tomorrow by the umpire coach. Oh, what an oppressive day it is for the time of year. I really am almost ready to faint. Cynthia never gave me the chance of writing to say I did or did not like her coming so much before the time. And I meant to have asked her to bring me a French bonnet, and then you could have had one made after mine. But I'm glad she's coming, poor dear.
Is anything the matter with her?
Oh, no. Why should there be?
You called her poor dear, and it made me afraid lest she might be ill.
Oh, no, it's only a way I got into when Mr. Kirkpatrick died. A fatherless girl. You know, one always does call them poor dears. Oh, no, Cynthia is never ill. She's as strong as a horse. She would never have felt today as I have done.
The next morning, Molly was up almost before it was light, arranging flowers in Cynthia's room. She could hardly eat her breakfast that morning. She ran upstairs and put on her things, thinking that Mrs. Gibson was quite sure to go down to the Angel Inn, where the umpire coach stopped, to meet her daughter after a 2-year absence.
Why, Molly, where are you going so early, child? The fog hasn't cleared away yet.
I thought you would go and meet Cynthia, and I wanted to go with you.
But she'll be here in half an hour, and dear Papa has told the gardener to take the wheelbarrow down for her luggage. I'm not sure if he has not gone himself.
Anyone not going?
No, certainly not. She will be here almost directly, and besides, I don't like to expose my feelings to every passerby in the High Street. You forget I have not seen her for 2 years, and I hate scenes in the marketplace. Now go and take off your bonnet and come and sit by me until she arrives.
Yes, Mama.
Well, Molly, here she is at last. This is Cynthia. Cynthia, this is Molly. You're to be sisters, you know.
Oh, Molly, my dear.
And here's Mama.
Why, how you've grown, darling. You look quite a woman.
And so I am. I was before I went away. I've hardly grown since.
Except it is always to be hoped in wisdom.
Yes, that we will hope. But come in, all of you. You're making quite a display on the doorstep.
All right, after you, ladies. Now, there's hot breakfast ready for you in the dining room when you want it. I'm sure you'll be needing it after your night's journey.
Molly will take you up to your room, darling. It is near hers. I'll come and sit with you in the dining room while you are having your breakfast.
Yes, Mama. This way, then. Cynthia. I'm sorry there isn't a fire for you, but I suppose it wasn't ordered, and of course I don't give any orders now.
Now, stop a minute. Let me look at you.
Yes, I think I shall like you. I'm so glad. I was afraid I should not.
Well, we're all in a very awkward position together, aren't we? I like your father's looks, though.
Oh, you may smile, but I don't know that I'm easy to get on with.
Mama and I didn't suit when we were last together. But perhaps we are each of us wiser now. Now, please leave me for 1/4 hour. I don't want anything more.
Molly went into her own room, waiting to show Cynthia down to the dining room. Not that in the moderate-sized house there was any difficulty in finding the way, but Cynthia had so captivated Molly that she wanted to devote herself to the newcomer's service. Cynthia was very beautiful and was so well aware of this fact that she had forgotten to care about it. Molly would watch her perpetually as she went about the house, moving almost as it were to the continual sound of music. Day after day, Mr. Gibson brought news of Mrs. Hamley's nearer approach to death. To Molly, so taken as she was with her new companion, these bulletins were like the toll of a funeral bell at a marriage feast.
What, girls? Not a bed yet?
We were waiting for you, Papa.
And where is your Mama?
Mama is upstairs in her room.
How is Mrs. Hamley today? Papa?
The end has come at last, my dear.
Oh, Papa.
Now, there now. They all sent their love to you, Molly. Roger said he knew how you'd feel it. He's to go back to Cambridge after the funeral on Tuesday. Look after Molly, will you, Cynthia? I must go to your mother.
You loved her dearly, did you not, Molly?
Yes.
Had you known her long?
No, not a year. But I'd seen a great deal of her. I was almost like a daughter to her, she said so. And yet I never bid a goodbye or anything. My mind became so weak and confused.
She had only sons, I think.
And Mr. Osborne and Mr. Roger Hanley.
Oh, I wish I could love people as you do, Molly.
Don't you?
No. A good number of people love me, I believe, or at least they think they do. But I never seem to care much for anyone. I do believe I love you, little Molly, whom I've only known for a few days, better than anyone.
Not than your mother?
Yes, than my mother. Oh, it's very shocking, I dare say, but it is so. Now, don't go and condemn me. I don't think love for one's mother quite comes by nature, and remember how much I've been separated from mine. I love my father, if you will, but he died when I was quite a little thing. Well, then Mama had to go out as a governess. She couldn't help it, poor thing, but she didn't much care for parting with me. I was a trouble, I dare say. So I was sent to school at 4 years old, first one school, then another, and in the holidays Mama went to stay at grand houses and I was generally left with the schoolmistresses. Once I went to the Towers. Mama lectured me continually. I was very naughty, I believe. And so I never went again. Oh, and once I went to London to stay with my uncle, Kirkpatrick. He's a lawyer. I'm getting on now, but then he was poor enough and had 6 or 7 children. It was winter time and we were all shut up in a small house in Doughty Street. But it wasn't so bad.
Then you lived with your mother when she began school at Ashcombe. Mr. Preston told me that when I stayed that day at the manor house.
What did he tell you?
Nothing but that. Oh, yes, he praised your beauty and wanted me to write to you and tell you what he'd said.
I should have hated you if you had.
Well, of course, I never thought of doing such a thing. I didn't like him.
Oh, I wish I was good.
So do I.
But it's no use talking. I'm not good, and I never shall be now. I must be a moral kangaroo.
Oh, how I should like to see them all. The Hamleys. Yet one can do nothing at such a time.
Affairs at the Hall were going on badly. Bereft of the quietly ruling spirit of Mrs. Hamley, it seemed to the squire as if all circumstances had conspired against him and as if he was too weak to struggle with them.
Why isn't dinner ready? It's 10 minutes past six.
I believe, sir, that Thomas was waiting for...
Don't talk to me of Thomas. Send dinner in directly.
Squire. Oh, Father.
Damn finery. You're late, Osborne.
Well, it surely isn't 6 o'clock.
It's more than quarter past.
Well, I fancy your watch must be wrong, sir. I set mine by the horse guards 2 days ago.
Wrong? My watch? My watch is like myself. Plain, but steady going. At any rate, it gives the law in my house. The king may go by the horse guards if he likes.
I beg your pardon, sir. I went by my watch. And I'd no idea you were waiting for me. Otherwise, I would have dressed much quicker.
I should think so. When I was a young man, I should have been ashamed to have spent so much time in my looking glass as if I'd been a girl. Fiddle faddling in a glass. Pah.
My mother always expected us all to dress for dinner. I got into the habit of doing it to please her.
And I, too, try to attend to her wishes, I do. And in more important things... I did when she was alive, and I do so now.
I never said you did not.
Yes, you did, sir. You meant it. I could see by your looks. I saw you looking at my morning coat. At any rate, I never neglected any wish of hers in her lifetime. I'll not have you casting up your mother's wishes to me, sir. You, who went near to break her heart at last.
I am only a cause of irritation to you. And home is no longer home to me. Put me in the way of making a living for myself. I will then leave the house and you shall be no longer vexed by my dress or my want of punctuality. I am as ready as any man to earn my living. Only the preparation for any profession will cost money, and money I haven't got.
No more have I!
But then what is to be done?
Why, you must learn to stop at home and not take expensive journeys. I don't ask you to help me in the management of the land. You're far too fine a gentleman for that. But if you can't earn money, at least you needn't spend it.
I am willing to earn money, but how am I to do it? You really are very unreasonable, sir.
Am I? but I don't set up for being reasonable. Men who have to pay away money that they haven't got for their extravagant sons aren't likely to be reasonable. There's two things you've gone and done which put me beside myself. You've turned out next to a dunce at college, and you're... Well, I won't say the other thing.
Tell me, sir.
No! I know what I know. Only I'll say this. Your friends no more know a piece of good timber when they see it than you or I know how you could earn £5 if it was to keep you from starving.
Oh, God. What would Father say if he knew I'd married a Frenchwoman? In his present mood, he'd disinherit me, if that is possible. And he'd speak about her in a way I couldn't stand. A Roman Catholic, too. I'd do it again. If only Mother had been in good health. If she could have heard my story and known Aimé. As it is, I must keep my secret. But where to get money? Where to get money? Oh, I wish Roger were here.
And the poor squire, shut up with his grief and his ill temper as well, in the dingy, dreary study where he daily spent more and more of his indoors life, turned over his cares and troubles until he was bewildered with the process, as a squirrel might be in going round in a cage. He had out day-books and ledgers and was calculating up back rents, and every time the sum totals came to different amounts. He could have cried like a child over his sums.
I'm getting old, and my head's less clear than it used to be. I think sorrow for her has dazed me. I was never much to boast on, but she thought a deal of me, bless her. Osborne ought to help me. He's had enough money spent on his learning. Instead, he comes down to dinner dressed like a popinjay, never troubles his head to think how I'm to pay his debts. I wish I'd told him to earn his living as a dancing master. He's dressed for all the world like one. And how he spent that money, no one knows. Perhaps Roger will turn up some day with a heap of creditors at his heels. No, not Roger. He may be slow, but he's steady. He'd take an interest in the estate. And he'd do up these weary accounts for me. Oh, I wish Roger was here.
One day, to Molly's infinite surprise, Mr. Preston was announced as a caller. Mrs. Gibson and she were sitting together in the drawing-room. Cynthia was out, gone into the town a-shopping. When the door was opened, the name given, and in walked the young man. His entrance seemed to cause more confusion than Molly could well account for.
Why, Mr. Preston, my needlework. How silly of
me. Let me help you, Molly.
No, it's quite all right. There. Well, Mr. Preston, how nice. Do sit down, I beg you.
Thank you.
Well, what a surprise. Goodness.
It is the first time I have been in Hollingford since your marriage, Mrs. Gibson, or I should certainly have called to pay my respects sooner.
I know you are very busy, Dashgrove, Mr. Preston. I did not expect you to call. Is Lord Cumnor at the Towers? I have not heard from dear Lady Cumnor for more than a week.
No, he is detained at Bath. But I had a letter from him giving me certain messages for Mr. Sheepshanks. Mr. Gibson is not at home?
No. He is a great deal out, almost constantly, I may say. I had no idea that I should see so little of him. A doctor's wife leads a very solitary life, Mr. Preston.
You can hardly call it solitary, I should think, when you have such a companion as Miss Gibson always at hand.
Oh, but I call it solitude for a wife when her husband is away. Poor Mr. Kirkpatrick was never happy unless I always went with him. But somehow, Mr. Gibson feels as if I should be rather in the way.
I don't think you could ride Pillion behind him on Black Bess, Mama.
Oh, but he might keep a broom. I've often said so, and then I could use it for visiting in the evenings. Really, it was one reason why I didn't go to the Hollingford Public Ball. I could not bring myself to use the dirty fly from the Angel. We really must stir Papa up against next winter, Molly. It would never do if you and... Well, it would never do.
Have you ever been to a public ball, Miss Gibson?
No.
It will be a great pleasure to you when the time comes.
I'm not sure. I shall like it if I have plenty of partners, but I'm afraid I shan't know many people.
And you suppose that young men haven't their own ways and means of being introduced to pretty girls? I only hope I may be one of your partners at the first ball you go to. Pray remember my early application for that honour when you are overwhelmed with requests for dances.
I don't choose to engage myself beforehand.
I suppose Miss Kirkpatrick will have returned from France before the Easter ball, Mrs. Gibson?
Yes, certainly. My daughter will be with us by then, I believe. And I dare say she will go out with us.
You have good news from her, I hope.
Yes, very. By the way, how are our old friends, the Robinsons? How often I think of their kindness to me at Ashcroft.
I will certainly tell them of your kind inquiries. They are very well, I believe. And when I last spoke to...
Mama, Molly, just look at... Oh.
Miss Kirkpatrick.
Oh, I've had such a busy morning. Oh, really, do look. Come over to the window, Molly, where the light is better. See this green ribbon? At only 14 pence a yard. And see this silk?
Mr. Preston, you know the Hamleys of Hamley Hall. They are great friends of my husband's. And poor Mrs. Hamley, the late Mrs. Hamley, could hardly do without Molly.
Miss Kirkpatrick.
She quite looked upon her as a daughter, especially towards the last, when I'm afraid she had a good deal of anxiety.
Mr. Osborne Hamley, I dare say you have heard. He did not do so well at college, and they had expected so much. Parents will, you know, Mr. Preston.
Well, at any rate, the squire must be satisfied now. I saw this morning's Times with the Cambridge examination lists in it. Isn't the second son called Roger?
Yes.
Well, he's senior wrangler.
Poor Mrs. Hamley, if only she'd lived to see...
Oh, the poor old squire. Not the wisest of men. He has woefully mismanaged his estate. And Osborne Hamley is too fine a gentleman to understand the means by which to improve the value of the land. Yes, the family's going down fast. And it's a pity when these old Saxon houses vanish off the land. But it is kismet with the Hamleys. Even the senior wrangler, if it is that Roger Hamley, will have spent all his brains in one effort. He will be a fellow of his college, of course. That will be a livelihood for him, at any rate.
Well, I believe in senior wranglers. And from all I've heard of Mr. Roger Hamley, I believe he will keep up the distinction he has earned. And I don't believe that the House of Hamley is so near extinction in wealth and fame and good name.
They are fortunate in having Miss Kirkpatrick's good word. If you will excuse me, Mrs. Gibson. Ladies.
Let me show you out, Mr. Preston.
Mrs. Gibson had been feeling the want of visitors who would appreciate the looks of her lovely daughter, and more thought that Mr. Osborne Hamley should be cheered up by a quiet little dinner party. Osborne declined the invitation, but thought it right to call afterwards. It was the first time Molly had seen any of the family since she left the hall just before Mrs. Hamley's death, and there was so much that she wanted to ask. She had to wait patiently until Mrs. Gibson had exhausted the first gush of her infinite nothings before she could ask her few modest questions. Then Cynthia came into the room, and Osborne seemed to fall under her power at once. Molly saw the look of content upon Mrs. Gibson's face, and remembered the secret which she had been let into so unwillingly. She was altogether puzzled by Osborne Hamley's manner and ways. It was not her idea of the conduct of a married man. As soon as he was gone, Mrs. Gibson began in his praise.
Well, really, I begin to have some faith in long descent. What a gentleman he is! How agreeable and polite! So different from that forward Mr. Preston.
Mr. Preston doesn't improve on acquaintance. There was a time, Mama, when I think both you and I thought him very agreeable.
I don't remember that. But we were talking of this delightful Mr. Osborne Hamley. Why, Molly, you were always talking of his brother. It was Roger this and Roger that. I can't think how it was you so seldom mentioned this young man.
I didn't know I had mentioned Mr. Roger Hamley so often.
But I saw much more of him. He was more at home.
Well, well, it's all right, my dear. I dare say he suits you best. But really, when I saw Osborne Hamley close to my Cynthia, I couldn't help thinking...
I perfectly understand what you're thinking of, Mama, and so does Molly, I have no doubt.
Well, there's no harm in it, I'm sure. Did you hear him say that, though he did not like to leave his father alone just at present, yet that when his brother Roger came back from Cambridge, he should feel more at liberty? It was quite as much as to say, if you will ask me to dinner then, I shall be delighted to come. And chickens will be so much cheaper, and cook are such a lovely way of boning them and doing them with forcemeat. Everything seems to be falling out so fortunately. And, Molly, my dear, you know I won't forget you. By and by, when Roger Hamley has taken his turn at stopping at home with his father, we will ask him to one of our quiet little dinners.
Oh, I'm afraid Molly isn't properly grateful, Mama. If I were you, I wouldn't exert myself to give a dinner party on her account. Bestow all your kindness upon me.
Mr. Roger Hamley has been very good to me. He was a great deal at home while I was there. And Mr. Osborne Hamley was very little there. That was the reason I spoke so much more of one than the other. Oh, Cynthia, instead of laughing at me, you might help me to explain myself.
Well, I should like to know what sort of man Roger Hamley is. But I suppose he will come home soon, and then I shall see for myself.
Roger, I want your advice. I have a plan.
You know you don't follow my advice when you've got it.
Well, not always, I know. Not when it doesn't agree with my own opinion. You're thinking about this concealment of my marriage, but you're not up in all the circumstances. You know how fully I meant to have done it if there hadn't been that row about my debts and then Mother's illness and death. And now you've no conception of how Father has changed, how irritable he's become.
Poor Father. I thought he looked terribly changed, shrunken somehow.
Well, he hardly takes half the exercise he used to, so it's no small wonder. Well, he's turned away all the men on the new works, which used to be such an interest to him. He won't ride, and the horses are eating their heads off, while he is constantly talking about money and expense. And that brings me to what I was going to say. I'm desperately hard up for money, and so I've been collecting my poems, going over them quite critically, in fact, and I want to know if you think Dayton would publish them. You've a name in Cambridge, you know, and I dare say he'd look at them if you offered them to him.
I can but try, but I'm afraid you won't get much by them.
I don't expect much. I'm a new man, and I must make my name. I should be content with 100. If I had 100 pounds, I'd set myself up to something. I might keep myself and Aimee by my writings while I studied for the bar. Or if the worst came to the worst, 100 pounds would take us to Australia.
Australia? What could you do there? And leave Father? I hope you never get your 100 pounds, if that is the use you're going to make of it. Why, you'd break the squire's heart.
I might have done once, Roger. But not now. Not now.
Mrs. Gibson was much occupied with the prospect of the Easter charity ball at Hollingford. Aping the manners of the aristocracy, as far as she knew them, she intended to bring out Molly and Cynthia on this occasion. "They are not out yet," was her favourite excuse when either of them was invited to any house to which she did not wish them to go, or they were invited without her. She even made a difficulty about their not being out when Miss Browning came in one morning to ask the two girls to come to a friendly tea.
"Just a little tea party and a round game afterwards, perhaps. Mr. Goodenough's grandchildren are
coming."
"Oh, you're
very kind, Miss Browning, but you see, I hardly like to let them go. They are not out, you know, till after the Easter ball."
"Not out?"
"Oh, till then we are invisible. After Easter, Molly and I shall know how to behave at a card party, not before."
"Well, you're always fond of your quips and your cranks, my dear, and I wouldn't quite answer for your behaviour. You sometimes let your spirits carry you away. But I'm quite sure Molly will be a little lady, as she always is."
"I don't think you would have called Molly a lady the other day if you had found her where I did, sitting 6 feet up in a cherry tree."
"Oh, Molly, I thought you'd left off those tomboy ways."
"She wants the refinement which good society gives in several ways. She's very apt to come upstairs 2 at a time.
"Only 2, Molly. Why, today I found I could manage 4 of those broad, shallow steps."
"My dear child, what are you saying?"
"Only confessing that I, like Molly, want the refinements which good society gives. Therefore, do please let us go to Miss Browning's this evening. I will pledge myself for Molly that she shan't sit in the cherry tree. And Molly shall see that I go upstairs as meekly as if I were a come-out young lady and had been to the Easter ball."
Very well. You see how difficult it is with daughters, Miss Browning.
Well, my dears, come in. We've got a gentleman for you after all. Wasn't that fortunate? Just as sister said you might find it dull. Well, you, Cynthia, she meant, because, you know, you've come from France. Then, just as if he'd been sent from heaven, Mr. Roger came to call.
Oh, Mr. Roger!
Miss Gibson, how very nice to see you after so long. And this must be...
My new sister, Cynthia Kirkpatrick, Mr. Roger Hamley.
I am delighted to meet you at last, Miss Kirkpatrick.
I also, Mr. Hamley. I understand you've made a great success at Cambridge.
At my uncle's, we always give a silver threepence for three dozen.
I was actually talking about...
You know what a silver threepence is, don't you, Miss Gibson?
What? Oh,
we
yes, of course.
Published in the Senators at 9 o'clock on a Friday morning.
That's very interesting.
I think it would be rather shabby to play at anything less than sixpence.
That gentleman over there is at Cambridge, and you know they always play very high there, and sometimes ruin themselves.
Well, on this occasion...
Don't they, Miss Gibson?
Oh, yes, certainly.
Who precedes the candidates for honour when they go into the Senate House is called the father of the college to which he belongs. Oh, I think I mentioned that before, didn't I, Miss Kirkpatrick?
I don't think so.
Rounds or sixes and three dozen counters cost sixpence. Now pay up, if you please, and let us begin at once.
Yes.
Come along, everyone, and help clear away. Now here are sandwiches and cakes and jellies. Phoebe, dear, don't sit gaping. Help me.
Oh, Molly, I'm so glad to see you again. It seems such a long time since Christmas.
Oh, it is a long time. We're close to Easter now. I've so wanted to tell you how glad I was to hear about your honours at Cambridge. I once thought of sending you a message through your brother, but then I thought it might be making too much fuss, because I know nothing at all of mathematics. And you were sure to have many congratulations from people who did know.
I missed yours, though, Molly. But I felt sure you were glad for me.
Glad and proud, too. Oh, I should so like to hear some more about it. I heard you telling Cynthia...
Yes, what a charming person she is.
Yes. But tell me about the senior wranglership, please.
Oh, it's a long story. And I ought to be hoping that Miss Browning's to hand round the sandwiches. Besides, you wouldn't find it very interesting. It's so full of technical details.
Cynthia looked very much interested.
Well, then I refer you to her, for I must go now. I can't for shame go on sitting here and letting those good ladies have all the trouble. But I shall come and call on Mrs. Gibson soon, I promise.
Well, how was the party?
Oh, it wasn't very entertaining. One didn't expect that.
Oh. Who was there? Quite a young party, wasn't it?
They'd only asked Lizzie and Fanny Orford and their brother. But Mr. Roger Hamley had ridden over and called on the Miss Brownings, and they kept him to tea.
Oh, Roger's there. He's come home, then. I must find time to ride over and see him.
You'd much better ask him here. Suppose you invite him and his brother to dine here on Friday, my dear.
My dear, these young Cambridge men have very good tastes in wine and don't spare it. My cellar won't stand many of their attacks.
Well, I didn't think you were so inhospitable, Mr. Gibson.
I'm not inhospitable, I'm sure. But if you'll put bitter beer in the corner of your notes of invitation, we'll have Osborne and Roger to dinner any time you like. And what did you think of my favourite, Cynthia? You hadn't seen him before, I think.
Oh, he's nothing like so handsome as his brother. Nor so polished. Nor so easy to talk to. He entertained me for more than an hour with a long account of some examination or other. There is something about him one likes.
The very next day, Roger Hamley came to pay his promised call. Molly was out in the garden with old Williams, the gardener, planning the arrangement of some new flower beds.
You can finish it now, I think. You know about the bright-coloured flowers being used against the privet hedge?
Why, yes, Miss Molly. Oh, I think it's clear in my head now. Mm-hmm. I'd have been loath to have made mistakes when you're so set upon your plans. Now, I'll tend to it directly. What did she say?
Molly! Oh. I only just found out where you were. Mrs. Gibson said you'd gone out, but didn't know where. And it was the greatest of chance that I turned round and saw you.
Oh, I saw you some time ago, but I couldn't leave Williams. I've been tanning the new flower beds, and he was unusually slow today.
Oh. Is that the paper you've got in your hand?
Yes.
Let me look at it, will you? Ah, I see you've borrowed some of your ideas from our garden at home, haven't you? Mm. This bed of scarlet geraniums with a border of young oaks pegged down. That was a fancy of my dear mother's.
How is the squire? I've never seen him.
No.
Since.
He told me how much he wanted to see you, but couldn't make up his mind to come and call. I suppose it would never do now for you to come and stay at the Hall.
No, certainly not.
I fancy if you could come, it would put us a little to rights. This wretched mystery that Osborne preserves about his affairs is at the root of it all. Oh, but there is no use talking about it. I don't know why I began. I can't tell you how much I like Miss Kirkpatrick. It must be a great pleasure to you having such a companion.
Yes. Oh, I'm very fond of her, and I think I like her better every day I know her. But how quickly you have found out her virtues.
I didn't say virtues, did I? Yet I don't think one could be deceived in that face. And Mrs. Gibson appears to be a very friendly person. She has asked Osborne and me to dine here on Friday.
Ah, bitter beer.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, it doesn't matter. Are you coming to dinner?
Certainly I am, unless my father wants me. And I've given Mrs. Gibson a conditional promise for Osborne, too. So I shall see you all very soon again.
Yes, it's quite true. I was not attending to what you and Mr. Gibson were saying. You see, I don't even know the ABC of science. Oh, but please don't look so severely at me, Mr. Roger, even if I am a dunce.
I didn't know. That is, I didn't mean to look severely, I'm sure.
Cynthia is not a dunce either. I do assure you, Mr. Osborne, that her memory for poetry is prodigious. Mm. I have heard her repeat Lord Byron's The Prisoner of Chillon from beginning to end. Cynthia, I wonder.
It would be rather a bore to hear her now, I think.
Ah, Mr. Gibson, I have found out before now that you have no soul for poetry. And Molly there is your own child. She reads such deep books, all about facts and figures. She'll be quite a blue stocking by and by.
Oh, Mama, you think it was a deep book because of the shapes of the different cells of bees in it. But it was not all that deep. It was very interesting.
Never mind, Miss Gibson. I stand up for blue stockings.
And I object to the distinction implied in what you say. It was not deep. Ergo, it was very interesting. Now, a book can be both deep and interesting.
Oh, if you are going to chop logic and use Latin words, I think it is time for us to leave the room.
Oh, don't let us run away as if we were beaten, Mama. Though it may be logic, I, for one, can understand what Roger said just now. And I read some of Molly's book, and whether it was deep or not, I found it very interesting. Mm. More so than I should think the prisoner of Chillon nowadays.
But come, ladies, it is time for us to retire and leave the gentlemen to their port.
Not for long, I'm afraid, my dear, as I have to go out on my evening rounds.
Ah, you see how I am so much neglected by this husband of mine. Well, all the better, for Mr. Roger and Mr. Osborne shall join us all the sooner in the drawing room. Yes, it is rather beautiful, that screen. I remember the Miss Brownings.
There is to be a charity ball in Hollingford soon, isn't there?
Yes, on Easter Tuesday.
Are you going? I suppose you are.
Oh, yes. Mama is going to take Molly and me.
You will enjoy it very much, going together.
Oh, yes. It would be very dull without Molly.
You are great friends, then?
I never thought I should like anyone so much. Any girl, I mean.
I was anxious to know. I'm so glad.
Cynthia, come here and sing that little French ballad to Mr. Osborne.
Which do you mean, Mama? Tu t'en repentiras, Colin.
Yes, such a pretty, playful little warning to young men. You'll be sorry, Colin. You'll come to repent. For if you take a wife, Colin, you'll come to repent.
Very well, Mama.
The advice may apply very well when there is a French wife in the case, but not, I am sure, to an Englishman who is thinking of an English wife.
This choice of a song was exceedingly malapropos had Mrs. Gibson but known it. Osborne and Roger, knowing that the wife of the former was a Frenchwoman and conscious of each other's knowledge, felt doubly awkward, while Molly was as much confused as though she herself were secretly married.
Too late a warning for poor Osborne, is it not, Miss Gibson?
In part four of Elizabeth Gaskell's Wives and Daughters, dramatized in 9 episodes by Barry Campbell, the part of Molly Gibson was played by Catherine Hurlbut, Claire, Angela Pleasance, Mr. Gibson, Tom Wilkinson, and Cynthia, Anne Louise Lambert, Squire Hamley, Robert Lang, Mrs. Hamley, Lilias Walker. Osborne, Adam Barham. Roger, Michael Troughton. Miss Browning, Diana Bishop. Mr. Preston, Brett Usher. With Nigel Graham, Peter Tutnam, and Moira Leslie. Thelma Whiteley was Mrs. Gaskell. The music was composed by Rachel Portman, and the director was Jane Morgan.